Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone, live from the green space here at WNYC today with this special edition of our program, The Resistance at 1 Year. With us now, the filmmaker Michael Moore, a cultural missing link, in a way, between Trump voters and other Americans, who you know from his many documentaries like Roger and Me, Bowling for Columbine, Sicko, Capitalism, A Love Story, and more. Michael Moore in Trump Land from 2016. Oh, well, it didn't make a difference in the election in the long run. And Fahrenheit 9/11. Rumor has it he's working on a new one called Fahrenheit 11/9. Think about it. It'll sink in. And he got to do a limited run on Broadway before Bruce Springsteen. He joins us for this by phone. Michael, we're so grateful for your time. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you for having me. And sorry I'm not there in person. And hello to everybody in the green space.
Is Fahrenheit 11/9 a real thing?
We are in the middle of making it right now. And I can't talk too much about it. But it's a film that should be out later this year.
You said since the election there needs to be a forefront strategy to end this carnage, as you put it. One, mass citizen action. Two, take him to court nonstop. Three, you run for office. Everybody run for office. Four, an army of satire. I guess you see yourself as primarily rooted in strategy number four?
Yes, but I've been very active in all the others too. I believe that it's not only important to keep our sense of humor during this era, but I also believe that satire and political humor can be a very powerful organizing tool. It could be a powerful weapon, nonviolent, against everything that's happening. But the other things have been happening. I mean, people have. It's been like a swarm of bees around his head. Every which way, whether it's all the groups that have taken him to court to stop various things that he's doing, all the marches and all the activists, all the people showing up at town halls. That has happened. Look at the number of people running for office and the number of women running for office come November. I don't want to be in the prediction business here, but I really sense a tsunami of voters showing up on November 6th, and I think we should all put that date in our heads and commit ourselves to bringing as many people with us to the polls that day. We should really set a record, an American record, for an off-year midterm election in terms of turnout. I think that's going to happen. I think that people are just chomping at the bit to have their say after seeing this first year.
Listeners, if you want to call up and talk to Michael Moore, you can. Any question for Michael Moore at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And audience here at the Green Space, raise your hands and we'll come around with a microphone. You did a one-man show, Michael, on Broadway for a limited few months run in 2017. Did that feel like the opposite of being a film director?
Yes, the exact opposite. And I'll tell you, I did not realize the impact it would have on me. I'm used to, Brian, when I finish a film, to see the audience's reaction, I go into a theater and I sit in the last row and I watch the backs of people's heads look at images on a two-dimensional screen. To stand on a stage on Broadway every night for 12 weeks and have 900 people in that room with you was a profound and powerful experience that I'm not an actor. I've not done this sort of thing before. And to have what essentially became a conversation, though it was mostly me performing, but I would bring people up on the stage and we did different things in the audience. and to have essentially be in, imagine 900 people in your living room every night having a conversation about what's going on with this country in this first year of Trump. It moved me in such a way that it actually has, and it's impacted the movie I'm making, because I came back to the film after the, you know, because we'd started it before the show. I came back to the film with some very different thinking about what the film should be, based on the interpersonal experience and reaction from nearly 1,000 people every night.
Can you give me an example of that?
Yes, I. I'm gonna say this, and it will then feel like it's gonna require an hour of discussion, and but we don't have that time. So I'll just throw this out. I left the 12 weeks on Broadway with three very powerful questions that I was asking myself, and I was asking the audience, basically. Number one is, who are we? Seriously, who are we? And secondly, you know, I've said in all my movies that, you know, we're really a good people. We Americans, we're a good people, and I really want us to. I don't want us to slide by with that anymore. I want to ask the question: Are we really a good people? Is that what we've been to the world, to ourselves? Just small things like letting the children's health program just evaporate. What society, what culture, what nation would treat its own children that way? I get why throughout history people have been bad to other cultures and other tribes and other nations, but generally you don't crap on your own, especially your own children. And the third question is, because we're all so concerned about saving this country, we have to get rid of Trump, we have to save America. And I want to ask the question, are we...
Oh, did we lose Michael's line? Michael, are you there?
I'm right here.
Go ahead, I'm sorry. Something happened. State that third question again.
The third question is America worth saving? I want to believe that it is, obviously. But our behavior is such that if the whole point of getting rid of Trump, we want to get rid of Trump, we're going to impeach Trump, we're going to get the Democrats in there in November, and then hopefully impeachment, et cetera, et cetera. But for what? Get rid of Trump so we can go back to the Reagan, Clinton, Bush, Obama years of insane capitalism and greed, of drone strikes, of invading other countries, what America do we really want? Just getting rid of Trump now can't be the answer. We have to really think beyond this and create this America that we've wanted to believe in our entire lives, and yet we have not actualized it. This experiment is still an experiment, and I think what we've seen, especially just listening to the first half of your show here, and then the upcoming women's marches that are happening, 280 of them all over the country. I mean, it's so incredible, and it's happened at a time. It's amazing to me that Donald Trump and Harvey Weinstein have intersected at this moment, and that who would have thought that it would have been a trigger to what I hope is going to become a very powerful movement to end this gender apartheid that we live under. And I say that meaning that the minority gender, that would be the one you and I belong to, Brian, had been in charge since the beginning, of this country, and long before that. And the majority gender has had to earn less, has had to worry about their own safety at work, has had to go, I mean, go down the whole list of things. This has to change. And I think in November, I hope this will be a start. It is incredible that 51-52% of the country have only 19% of the seats in Congress. If I'm telling you, when historians look back at our time, they're going to wonder, first of all, we didn't let this gender vote for the first 150 years. And then it took another 100 years before they had any semblance of power. The America that I want to save is the America we've never really had. Mm. And so that means, you know, yes, we have to get rid of Trump, but we also have to fix these other fundamental things in our system if all the other things are going to get better.
Filmmaker Michael Moore, our guest here on WNYC, and we'll go to some of your phone calls for him shortly at 212-433-WNYC. If you want to call in, 433-9692, or raise your hand here in the green space if you have a question for him here. And Michael, to follow up on what you were just saying, and thank you for giving us, as white males, a minority group that we can belong to. Michelle Goldberg points out in her New York Times column today an under-discussed quote from the Michael Wolff book in which Steve Bannon says Trump's lawyer, quote, took care of 100 women coming forward with things during the campaign. That on top of the Wall Street Journal report of a payment to a porn star who says she had an affair with Trump while Melania was home with a new baby. And the Daily Beast has another one about a non-disclosure agreement regarding Trump with another porn star. And all the while, he and his supporters claim moral superiority, she points out. Is this an avenue with more potential for the resistance than has been realized?
Well, imagine, let's just take Trump's name out of it, and let's say the news this week had been Obama paid off a porn star before the election. Could you imagine that headline?
He's done.
With anyone else, first of all, it not only would have been the only news, he'd be on his way out. But it just becomes another nugget of what our has to go into our ears. It has to roll around in our brains, and we know the man has no shame. He seems to lack some very. I mean, the thing when people call him a sociopath, I think a better way to define that is that it's rare that you run into another human being that literally lacks empathy. Even the worst people you know at work or school or whatever have some little bit of empathy for somebody. that he is somehow. And we just accept it now. And you were talking about this in the earlier hour about the normalization of Trump, that we just sort of accept it. Oh, yeah, he paid off a porn star. Now this morning, oh, he paid off another porn star. Tomorrow, it'll be just, it adds to the noise. And I think the fear, amongst people who are very involved in the resistance here, is that people will tune out to this because we just accept it now. Of course, yeah, that's Trump. You know, we have to never accept this. We have to never accept any of his lies, the 2,000 lies that the Washington Post documented, this behavior, all his behavior with and toward women. My hope is, and I think this will happen, is that there is going to, as I said, be a tsunami of voters. If you're in a northern climate, it'll be an avalanche of voters, whatever the appropriate term is. I believe that we're going to see something in November we've never seen before. Your question about Stormy Daniels, I mean, I think we all feel the same way, that while it's great fodder for late night comedians, even the late-night comedians, especially the smarter ones like Colbert or John Oliver, whatever, Samantha Bee, you know, they realize, too, that this just, it's funny, but it's not funny anymore. And when it really is affecting our lives, decisions are being made every single day in the Trump administration that are hurting this planet, that are taking rights away from people, that are, you know, the thing that happened in Detroit yesterday with the man who's lived here since he was 10 years old.
What happened?
In Detroit yesterday, a man by the name of Jorge Garcia was brought here by his parents when he was 10 years old from Mexico. He's 39 now, so he's lived here for 30 years. And ICE, the ICE agents, showed up, essentially kidnapped him, took him to Detroit Metro Airport, and put him on a plane to Mexico. He is married to an American. He has two American citizen children. He's lived and worked here. The man has never even had a traffic ticket. And he was taken away from his family yesterday and put on a plane to Mexico on Martin Luther King Day. You could go online and look at the, just look at the footage of this man being ripped from his family at the airport. And it's just I think the rage that exists in us over this should not be in any way, and I don't think it can be brought down or nullified or mollified by the next Stormy Daniels story or whatever, because there is a rampage going on inside the American voter, and it is going to grow and it will come to a big a huge turnout, I think, in November.
We'll continue with Michael Moore in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC on our whole show special on the resistance at 1 year. My guest for another 10 minutes or so, filmmaker Michael Moore. And let's take a phone call. Carol in Morristown. You're on WNYC with Michael Moore. Hi, Carol.
Hi, how are you? Thank you so much for taking my call. I so love the NPR radio. I need to let Michael Moore know that he started something. In Morristown, we have a representative, Rodney Freelandhuizen, who is the chair of the Appropriations Committee. And he's like a dynasty in New Jersey, and nobody ever runs against him. And Michael Moore tried to make this point by putting up a ficus tree to run against Rodney 1 year. And I want you to know that this year, we don't need a ficus tree. We have a real person primarying Rodney Freelandhuizen. His name is Martin Hewitt. And he is a different breed of politician. He's running as a Republican, but he actually started as an independent and just couldn't get financial backing to run as an independent. So talking to both Democrats and Republicans, he figured out the best way to help remove Rodney from office is to primary him as a Republican. So he is running as a Republican. He has no financial backing. He needs so much support because we need to get Rodney out. Rodney has started to, he used to be a moderate, but he's not anymore. He votes totally the Trump policy, totally whatever the GOP is saying. That's how he votes. Even if it's totally counterproductive to his constituents here in the 11th District.
And I know that's
there's a whole bunch of people called the New Jersey 11th for Change, hundreds of us that have been there every Friday at Rodney's office, and he hasn't had a town hall since 2013.
Carol, thank
you. And we beg him every week for a town hall, and he turns a blind eye and a blind ear. He only comes out occasionally to a pancake breakfast at a fire hall somewhere, or he'll show up to a school to talk to a few high school kids.
Carol, I'm going to move on, but thank you so much. And yes, I know, and we've been covering that NJ 11 for Change is one of the big focal points of the resistance in the state of New Jersey.
Well, because this congressman, Freelandhuizen, has never has anyone really run against him. He's never primaried. 18 years ago, at that point, it was like Democrats weren't even putting up people against him to run in the general election.
So you ran a ficus tree against him?
I ran a ficus tree, yes. I went to Trenton, to the state capitol, to try and get the tree actually on the ballot. They said that the law said that it had to be of human form. So we ran the ficus as a write-in candidate and got hundreds and hundreds of votes for this. Look, I don't like, you know, when you have only one candidate on the ballot, it's a Soviet-style election, and they've been having Soviet elections out in the 11th District of New Jersey now for 20 or 30 years, and I'm so happy to hear that the people will finally have a choice on the ballot and hopefully retire someone who has, I'm sure, served his country well in these 3 decades or so, but it is time to move on.
So you ran a ficus tree against Rodney Frelinghuysen. I read that you're threatening to start fracking near Mar-a-Lago. Did I see
that?
Well, I was.
Well, I did. No, I did. Well, when Trump announced that he was going to allow offshore drilling along these states, and Florida was one of the states that was listed, I immediately called a place that rents these Halliburton fracking devices to rent one. To start my drilling off the shores of Mar-a-Lago. And 3 days later, Trump announces that he was exempting Florida from the offshore drilling that they are going to be doing. Now, I'm not going to take credit for that, Brian, but now that I've rented the fracking machine, you know, we're trying to figure out which state to go to next so that maybe that state will also get exempted.
And I read on your Twitter feed in the last few days that you're suggesting every American call up their senators or congresspeople and tell them which S-hole country your family came from. Is that right?
Yes, I did. I called up my Republican congressman in Michigan in the 1st District, and I said, I'm Michael Moore here, Traverse City, Michigan, and I just want you to know that my family came from, I won't use the word here out of respect for you, Brian, of Ireland, and believe me, the Irish for 100+ years were exactly considered that word, and I want, if everybody did that, I think it just, again, it sends a message to your member of Congress just how much the level of anger is that's boiling over in this country. Can I just give the number of Congress? Everybody has a right to call it. They will actually answer it. If you give the operator your zip code, she or he will send you to your member of Congress. 202-225-3121. 202-225-3121. That's the Capitol Hill switchboard. Give them your state or your zip code, and they'll send you to whatever senator, which either senator of yours you want to speak to or your member of Congress.
And that's why we invited Michael Moore on today, ladies and gentlemen, so he could be 411 and give you the phone number for the Congress of the United States. Michael, thank you so much for giving us some time today. Keep it up.
Thank you so much, Brian. Thank you, everybody.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come live in the green space. Stay with us.